Welcome to Trade Off, the podcast about the people, politics, and power inside Europe's trade policy. Today, I'm joined by two guests, both veterans of global trade and the multilateral system. Plugging in from Washington, D.C., we are joined by Anabel Gonzalez, Vice President of the Inter-American Development Bank and a former Deputy Director General of the World Trade Organization. Joining me here in the studio is Ignacio Garcia Bercero, Director for Multilateral Affairs, so essentially the person steering the EU's work on the World Trade Organization. Thank you for being here.
Hi, Tom.
Thank you very much, Tom. I'm delighted to be with you and Ignacio.
So, in every episode of Trade Off, we start with just that, a trade. I ask the guests to bring something for me, and I'll give them something in return. So, what I have for you is something of a puzzle. I will call on our man in Washington, Thibault, to deliver the Washington-based part of this trade. I have brought you two lunch boxes. There's a similar element and a different element on this item.
So I think you have here something that looks like the WTO logo, and it says DS1, DS577. So that's probably two dispute settlement numbers, no? Two dispute settlement cases, I guess.
Yes, absolutely. So, Anabel, what does yours say?
So mine says DS1 and DS27, and I had the same thought as Ignacio.
Starting with DS1, do either of you have an idea about what that might be?
Reformulated gasoline, by any chance? No.
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 So it's the first ever dispute settlement case in the WTO. It's Singapore against Malaysia. It's, in fact, the prohibition of imports of polyethylene and polypropylene, which is essentially plastic, which refers to your plastic lunchboxes. And then, so the other two codes, let's maybe start with Anabel. This, in fact, was a case that Costa Rica was a third party on.
That is bananas. How could I forget? No, I don't forget that one. Well, there were many, many iterations of that conversation and that negotiation. And at the end of the day, it worked out.
And so, Ignacio, your code.
I'm afraid that Anabel is going to win this competition. And 577 sounds a very high number.
Is related to your home country.
Spain. Olive oil. Yes, olive. Olives.
Yes.
Olives. Yes.
Now that you've both solved it, you can both open your open your lunch boxes and enjoy your prizes.
Very nice. You know, I see my banana chips here. That's great. I love them.
Anchoa. But you know anchoa. That's excellent.
And I obviously brought you these items, not just to do a nice little quiz, but because dispute settlement is such an important issue at the WTO, and I'm really looking forward to getting back to that later. But in the meantime, Ignacio, what have you brought for me?
I brought you two tins of sardines. I was trying to find a tin of Peruvian sardine, but I did not manage it. This is actually Moroccan sardines. But it's very symbolic about what the WTO is about. Because in 2001, we had a dispute between Peru and the European Union about our regulations on sardines. Peru won the case. We appealed. But after, we also lost in appeal. So it's a symbol about how the WTO can help developing countries to defend their interests vis-à-vis the big ones. And then the second one is actually Portuguese sardines, which are labeled as wild sardines, certified sustainable seafood, MSC. So it is an indication about how the WTO has evolved from purely dealing with market access issues to also deal with sustainability questions.
Great. And indeed, another hook to discuss dispute settlement, which again, we'll come back to later. But in the meantime, Anabel, what have you brought for me?
Okay, so I brought two things. First is I brought the world to you. That is, here you go. This is a decorative globe to put in your office. I thought it would be a reminder that, you know, we all live in the same world and we need to cooperate to take good care of it. I think it's also cool because you can see the maritime routes that are so critical to trade. And the second one, I just forwarded an article on Doha and global labor standards, the agenda item that wasn't, that was written by a former U.S. Point person on trade and labor in the Seattle conference, Andrew Sammet. And I thought this could be a good conversation starter. And I also wanted to have something digital come into our discussions.
And yes, thanks to its digital transmission, we both received it in time to read it before we sat down today together. Very interesting, very accessible kind of retrospective of labor standards at the WTO. What did you think, Ignacio?
Reading this article was really fascinating, no? Because it really showed that we were quite close to actually finding a way forward on one of the most difficult and divisive issues. And, well, we didn't quite manage to do it.
So where are we now in the WTO with labor standards?
Well, that's an interesting question. You know, it's been a topic that has been very controversial in the trading system. One of the most important moments in the WTO was whether you could bring in greater understanding between how trade and labor issues are related. Normally, workers that work in export-oriented industries, for example, tend to have higher salaries, tend mm-hmm. to have better labor conditions and other elements. So, you know, even if the topic has been very controversial, it's also true that over time, both the trade and labor communities have understood this issue as an interrelated issue and have engaged into, you know, better research to understand the impact of it.
And this article is also relevant from a different perspective, because it mentions Seattle, which, if I am not mistaken, is where you both met. Do you remember that?
I do. This was the third ministerial conference of the WTO. And in the middle of that week, there was a decision that was made to establish a working group to discuss trade and labor standards. So at that time, then Director General Michael Moore, Director General of the WTO, asked me to chair this working group. And this was a very, very controversial discussion. And there was Ignacio, who was representing the EU at the time. And as I remember it, we went into smaller group negotiations. And if my memory doesn't fail me, it was the EU who started, you know, to suggest what could a potential paragraph on this topic would look like to have the WTO and other institutions work closer together in this area. And Ignacio played a very constructive role in what was otherwise, you know, a very, very tense situation.
I have to say that, Seattle was a terrible conference. I don't have great memories about Seattle. My only real good memory about Seattle was this small group that Annabelle was actually mediating, facilitating, because quite frankly, I think we were making progress. And if it had not been for a number of reasons that the whole ministerial collapse, and those were not particularly because of this, it was a much broader problem, I think we might have been able to get somewhere. And I think it was a little bit of a missed opportunity that we did not manage to find a way to introduce these kind of conversations into the WTO.
So Seattle is often referred to as an incredibly important moment for global trade. And I'd like to elaborate a little bit more on that and also explain how it's impacted today and the way that global trade looks today.
For me, the Ministry of Seattle was the first time that I really realized how different the WTO was to the GATT as an institution. There was the United States, which I think was much more skeptical about a big negotiation, probably with an interest on market access, but not much more than market access. And then you had many, many developing countries who had a little bit of a buyer's remorse about the WTO, concern about the implementation of the obligations that they have assumed in the WTO, and the sense that it was not the time to embark in a new global trade negotiation. And those divisions were very, very strong during the ministerial conference. Then we tried to find a way forward 2 years later with the launch of the DDA, just to tell you that in my view, it was the moment which I realized this is a very different institution to the GATT, and it's an institution which really has some very deep divisions among the membership, which is going to make it difficult for the WTO to fulfill at least expectations that some of us have about how the WTO could fulfill its mandate.
So why is the WTO worth investing in? Why is it so important?
Well, I think that, in my view, the WTO is more important now than it even was when the DDA was launched, precisely because we are living in a very tense global environment with a lot of geopolitical tensions, with a lot of risk of fragmentation of the global economy. And the WTO has been the infrastructure on the basis of which global trade has been able to develop. So if we are not able to maintain the role of the WTO, if we are not able to progressively reform the WTO, I think the consequences of this can be very bad economically and, in my view, also politically. Because the WTO is basically about the rule of law and about containing of power dynamics. And if you don't have an institution like the WTO, then there's no longer rule of law, and power dynamics are going to exacerbate. And that, I think, is very risky. And so it is risky for the European Union because perhaps more than other big trading partners, we need to have a stable rule-based environment to operate.
Okay, but could you give me an example of what this means in practice?
Well, despite the fact that we have concluded so many free trade agreements, still 55% of the trade of the European Union is conducted on the basis of the WTO agreements, MFN tariffs, and even more if you are basically saying how much of our trade is conducted on the basis of WTO rules. So we cannot actually do away with the WTO. It is fundamental for our position in global trade.
Annabel, do you have any kind of experiences that might illustrate your belief in this system?
So let me say that I do think that the world needs the WTO as much as ever. First, the WTO can assist countries tap into new sources of trade growth. Digital technologies have boosted trade in services, and they have been growing much faster than trading goods and trading other types of services. So one reason why we need the WTO is to promote growth in the world. The second is that we need the WTO to help solve problems of the global commons. A successful result on climate change needs to incorporate the trade dimension. And the third and final reason why I do believe we need the WTO today is the WTO can help manage and de-escalate trade tensions. Because in the previous ministerial, in MC12, one of the issues that was being discussed is how can WTO members agree on flexibilities on intellectual property rules to be able to provide for geographic diversification production of vaccines. A very controversial issue. And we worked, again, very closely, first with a set of four members, the US, the EU, India, South Africa, reaching first an understanding with them, then expanding it to other members, very important, China, UK, Switzerland, and finally trying to get agreement by the full membership, which resulted in one of the most important agreements that came out of MC12 in June 2022.
So it's clear that this institution is incredibly important, but it's also a fact that it's not working the way that it's supposed to. And one of the big reasons for that is about the dispute settlement system. So maybe you could explain in simple enough terms what is so important about the dispute settlement system.
So the WTO provides members with a legal framework to resolve trade disputes that arise between them in implementing the agreements. Now, it's important to note, I think, that since the mechanism was established almost 30 years ago, there have been over 600 disputes that have been taken to the mechanism. And this is important because it not only helps to sort out those disputes, but also prevents other disputes from happening because other members see how issues are resolved. This dispute settlement mechanism is in crisis right now. The appellate body is no longer able to deliver binding resolutions of trade disputes. And this has basically left members in a situation where panel reports can get appealed into the void. And then there is, you know, the legal dispute cannot be solved.
Okay. So just to come in there, maybe I'll come over to Ignacio to ask to explain, perhaps, why is it not working now?
Well, the reason why it's not working is because at some point in time, the Trump administration that considered that they were very unsatisfied about the way that the appellate body was actually functioning. And the way to signal that dissatisfaction was to block the appointment of members of the appellate body.
But it wasn't just the Trump administration.
It is true that before Trump took the decision to block appointments of the appellate body, the U.S. had been expressing a number of concerns about the way that the system had been working, particularly concerns about the rulings of the appellate body limiting too much policy space for countries. Now, the real problem is that the position of the Trump administration was to block appointments and to refuse to engage in trying to find a solution to the concerns that they had actually expressed. Now, at least that is not the situation anymore, because there has begun to be a process of engagement, and that is positive. But the fundamental question continues to be, there has to be a possibility to have a system which cannot be blocked, and where there is a legitimate decision to adjudicate on trade disputes.
I'd like to hear a little bit more of your own personal experience as well, and also what has you passionate about working in the WTO. This has been a huge part of your lives and a huge part of your careers. And I just was wondering what you find personally fascinating about the WTO, about this multilateral approach to trade.
I suppose that one of the reasons why I have always been fascinated about GATT on the WTO as an institution, because an institution where you really have to be working with many, many different perspectives. It's not just an institution with the like-minded. It's an institution where you have many different perspectives on countries. And trying to work in that context and engineer results is very challenging. But when you get to a result, I think it is actually very, very rewarding. So that's one of the reasons which motivate me in the WTO. The other one is, I suppose, I'm a lawyer. I believe in the rule of law. I'm maybe idealistic, but I still think it's important to have a global institution on trade, which is based not on power dynamics, which is based on the rule of law. I think it was a huge achievement when that was done in the Uruguay round. I think it was a very complex process, and it would really be a pity to lose that.
Annabelle, what about you?
You know, I am a big believer in cooperation. I do think that countries need to come together, define the rules so that firms, workers, you know, they know what is it that they need to do to be able to participate in international trade. There are some things in the world that can only happen in the context of the WTO. And yes, it is complex. Yes, it is challenging. Yes, it takes time. But I myself find that the possibility of having impact is so great that, you know, working through the complexities, working through the time that it takes to reach agreement is definitely worthwhile.
So you both sat through so many rounds and seen so much happen in the WTO, and I'd be really interested to hear if there are any moments that stand out to you as particularly impressive.
I'm going to share one because it was actually in June 2022 when there were, you know, it was 4 a.m. on the last day of the MC12. All, you know, representatives were in the large WTO room, and we were ready to announce the conclusion of the round. But for that to happen, we needed to hear a final sort of understanding between the U.S. and China on precisely the issue of the TRIPS waiver. Everyone was exhausted after, you know, a couple of days without sleep. And at one point, you know, a little bit over four, they come to me to the podium and they say, "We reached agreement." So that was to me a very sort of exciting moment because we had worked so hard and it was such an important, it was so important to get a good result on MC12, you know, that I remember that moment with particular fondness.
How about you, Ignacio?
Well, actually two moments. One is an MC12 moment, which was actually, I think, when also quite late at night, after there has been a lot of discussions among a smaller group of countries, particularly with the ACP, to try to find a way forward on fisheries subsidies. the outcome of the negotiations came to the bigger group, and after the basically was confirmed that we have an agreement on fisheries subsidy, it was a huge applause. I think it was a really very emotional moment when we actually managed to conclude the fisheries want negotiations. And then something which is really going back a little bit more to the origins, because you mentioned before the Doha. At the time that I went to Doha, I had already stopped dealing with WTO negotiations. I was in charge of WTO dispute settlement. But someone told me, by the way, apart from bringing your normal files, trade and competition policy, it might be good that you bring with you a file about bananas. Because actually the ACP countries have asked for a waiver that needs to be decided. And maybe this is going to become, at the end of the day, one of the complicating factors in the Doha negotiation. And then finally I spent my whole Doha ministerial negotiating with the ACP countries, negotiating with the Latin American countries to find a way forward on bananas. And when we have found the resolution on bananas, then I spent my last night negotiating with Thailand and Philippines about a way forward on tuna. Because they said, the Latin America have got their solutions on banana, we need our solution on tuna. But that was quite a fascinating experience. Nothing to do with the launch of the DDA, because we were talking about bananas and tuna. But actually, without that, I think probably the DDA would not have happened.
The question then is, where to from here? What's on the agenda, and what are the hopes, and are we hopeful, or are we heartbroken? Maybe starting with Annabelle, and then I'll ask Ignacio to elaborate.
So, in a way, I think that MC12 set forward the agenda for MC13, because one important aspect that we have for discussion in MC13 is the continuation of fishery subsidies negotiation. In my view, this is one of the most important areas of negotiation for MC13. I would say another central item, of course, and I think for many members would probably be the number one priority, is dispute settlement. And we discussed about that. There has been progress in a number of areas, but still important gaps, particularly on the appellate body. And let me say that a third issue that I think is very important for MC13 is the extension of the moratorium on e-commerce. This is something that has been happening during a number of ministerials. A great majority of developing and developed members support it, but there also some members who don't. And I think this is a critical issue for the digital economy in going forward.
Mm-hmm. Okay, and over to you, Ignacio.
Well, I have to say that I'm impressed, because even if Annabelle is no longer in the WTO, she follows all the details about what is happening in Geneva. Maybe just to try to integrate what she said on this narrative about why the WTO matters. I mean, if you are going to look into what MC13 could do that contributes towards market opening, clearly it is critical to maintain the moratorium. Secondly, one of the real raison d'etre of the WTO in the current context is to promote cooperation on sustainability. We can only manage the commons together. Doing fishery subsidies too would be great. That would be the big prize from that point of view in terms of MC13. I'm beginning to see how we can advance the discussion in the WTO about the whole trade and climate interface. To advancing the deliberations on the trade and climate interface, in how WTO could make positive contributions towards decarbonization, where it is plurilaterally, where it is through the Committee on Trade and Environment, I think it's going to be also an important issue where we should be making at least some modest steps forward. And then the third area is, of course, this question about managing trade tensions. What can be done to contain a subsidy race? Because at the end of the day, no one is going to win if we actually enter into the dynamic of increased subsidization in the industrial sector. So beginning to have that conversation in the WTO is going to be very important in NC13.
Could you elaborate a bit more on why this conversation around subsidies is so important and what it means at the WTO?
Okay, well, let me just go back in time one moment, because at the time when the DDA was launched was also the time when China joined the WTO. And of course, since then, China has become the largest trading power, a country which has a huge impact in the global trading system, which of course it is good in one sense, but it also a source of distortions because of the vault of non-market practices in China and because of the huge amount of subsidization which is actually creating these global distortions. So we need to find a way to have a conversation about these issues in the WTO. We need to have a conversation which brings every perspective because we have a fundamental interest on avoiding the continuation of a subsidies race. It's not only about China, but of course Chinese subsidies are a very important part of the issues that need to be debated. And that's why we need to begin this conversation in the WTO.
Right. So a lot on the plate, a lot of hard work ahead. Fingers crossed anyway. And we'll see how it all plays out. So now, after our wonderful conversation, I think it's time that we move on to the rapid-fire questions.
Go ahead and shoot, Tom.
In another life, what would you have been?
I think I would have liked to be an artist, but, you know, I'm not sure whether I really have the talent. But, you know, if it's another life, I could actually then dream that I would be a movie director rather than a trade director.
Very good.
I would have liked to be a neurosurgeon. I like the complexity. I like to help people. I like the impact. I would have liked to be a doctor.
What's something that you always take with you when traveling, and you can't say laptop or phone?
Well, actually, I have been listening to some of these podcasts, and I see that Sabine always goes with an e-book. And the knee always goes with a paperback. I'm more of a knee read on a person. I always go with a paperback. Although, like the knee, I often don't have the time to read it because you are so tired when you actually go to a mission. There is very little time that you actually have to actually read.
So I always take with me dark chocolate because, you know, it gives me the energy to keep going.
If you could have a superpower, what would it be?
Traveling in time, but backwards, not forward. I would be too frightened to travel forward.
So I, in my case, it would also be like traveling, but it would be more like teleport, super speed, fly, to be able to be, you know, in many places very quickly and do many, many things.
What's your favorite way to travel?
By train, no doubt.
I like trains also. I like trains, but I have to say that that is in Europe, where trains are fantastic.
Most admired historical figure?
That's really difficult. I mean, I think I would go for an artist. I mean, I think there's a Spanish poet called Luis Cernuda. He's not terribly well known, but he was at least as good a poet as Federico García Lorca. He was one of those Spaniards who had to leave after the Civil War. He's a great... He's a great poet, but he's also a great citizen. So I think that, I would choose him.
Wonderful.
So I like these big political figures that lead in challenging times. I'm always amazed by how is it that they do it? How do they find the strength, the courage, the vision? So I like, you know, Winston Churchill. I like someone like Martin Luther King as well. I like Angela Merkel. Yeah, I admire many people. I admire my former boss, Ngozi Okonjo-Iweala. So, yeah.
Excellent. Well, look, thank you both so much for joining me today. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Good to see you, Annabelle.
Great seeing you.
Trade-Off is brought to you by the European Commission.